David promised that he was going to cry tonight in his Q&A. We're gonna try and get Barbara Walters with him. The reason I'm here is I'm an old friend of David. When I first started directing music videos,
not so old.
You
look young.
Okay, good. I'm actually old. So I was directing music videos at David's company, Propaganda Films, in the early '90s, and David and his producing partner Sion, who's here, were kind of our older siblings in our.
We were Greg and Marcia.
Yes. Yeah. and me and my producing partner Vince were Peter and Cindy.
Yeah. You.
So David's an old friend of mine, and I'm happy to be here for him and with him, and to see this movie again tonight. I'm very proud of him. And Jesse, what is
where
your
were you in the '90s?
Yeah, were you?
What was the maid's name?
Yeah. Alice.
I was Alice.
What's your relationship with David like, Jesse?
Like an uncle.
uncle.
My relationship with him, was. An amazing experience for me. I think my relationship with him is primarily this incredible, kind of creative,
amazing and incredible. That's good.
He was able to kind of pull things out of me and encourage me to do things that made me feel as creative as I've ever felt as an actor.
Good job, David.
Thanks.
How did you find Jesse, or pick Jesse, or what was the process?
Well, this movie, obviously, if you can imagine a script that's about the size of a Manhattan phone book, when it first came to me, it was 162 pages, and it's difficult stuff. I mean, Jesse tends to kind of make light of the fact that he tends to sort of make people feel like, it's just like riding a bicycle. But for a lot of people, we saw 30, 35 actors audition for this role, and it isn't that easy. It's really, I remember grabbing Aaron and dragging him into my office and pressing play on the quick time that we had and showing him Jesse's audition. And it was like you kind of finally went, oh, thank God. Our job is done. Like, we've finally found Mark Zuckerberg. And not to say that it's Mark Zuckerberg. It's a hyperbolized version of him. I mean, I've never seen him speak anywhere near as fast as we needed him to be in this movie. He isn't that. So it is a, it's a heightened thing. But I do remember, both Aaron and I looking at each other once we'd seen this and going, now we just got to get on to everybody else. Because he is the hub of the whole thing. And so once we had Jesse, and Fred Durst, who's a great friend of mine, had told me a lot about how much he adored Jesse. And I read in some blogs or something that Jesse was rumored, and I hadn't seen anything.
Those are my blogs.
Yeah, exactly. I read on jesseeisberg.com, which... But I remember kind of feeling like, fuck it, nobody's going to tell me we were going to cast this movie. But as soon as we saw the audition tape, it was pretty obvious.
The blogs were already saying that.
Yeah, so I was like, God, they were right.
And that's how you cast now.
Yeah, exactly. now we do it in a higher casting.
And I remember when you first told me about that you're doing this movie, you're doing this story of Facebook, and I didn't really...
Yeah, you tried to talk me out of it.
I tried to talk you out of it.
Yeah, you were like,
why?
You're like, well, we just got like, what?
No, but why did you want to? Why did you want to do this movie?
I read a script. It was really good. And the story was really compelling. And this guy at the heart of it was this, not obsequious character looking for approval. He was just doing what he was going to do and then torpedoes. And I thought that was, you don't read a lot of scripts like that.
Well, and why would?
you know, you know, conventional wisdom is that the lead in your movie has to be somebody who's embraceable and not prickly or too smart or thinks that he's too smart or, you know, takes advantage of people in situations doing first on betterment.
And so how do you relate to the movie?
I don't to it, but I no, I just I look I just res- I felt like I knew people like this, you know. Spike. but I, you know, I felt like I knew everybody. You know, I knew Eduardo. I knew kind of what it was like to be left in the dust by somebody. I knew what it was like to have to ask Johnny to you know, take a side. No, I'm kidding.
He's revealing a personal business dilemma yeah. from the early '90s music
so
video world.
Sweat. Anyway.
Let's take some questions. Yes, right up front.
All of your projects are very different, make different storyline, different style, technique, and all of them are very successful projects. So well, for me it is, or at least my opinion. But so when you pick a project, what goes through your mind and along?
When you pick a project, what goes through your mind?
All the projects are very different.
And along the line making the movie, what kind of decision did you make to get the movie so successful?
I don't know how to answer the second part of your question, which is how do you make it successful?
It's no decision.
What yeah, I don't know what decisions you make to make it successful. I know that for a director, it's very simple. The enjoyment that you get out of reading a script is over the second you've read it. So everything from that moment on becomes about like going, how do I go back, you know, it's like first hits free. It's like, how do you get back to that feeling of what it was like to not know what the next scene is or what the next page is. So that's just discipline, and that's just trying to find the right people that you can kind of, you know, there's the best laid plans, there's the thing that you have in your head, the thing that you want to execute, and then there are the people that you surround yourself with that you try to show me something I haven't, you know. I mean, part of what was so exciting about working with Jesse is that, you know, he didn't have a preconceived notion of exactly who this guy was. He didn't have like a set, behavioral limitations. It was kind of like, you know, we just go run and we go, maybe not toward the tree, like over there. To the outhouse, you know, it's like you kind of like you start to play, and that's where you find what it is.
Can I ask, so just following up on that, Jesse, what was your preparation or the rehearsal like, or how much did you study tapes of him, and when did you stop watching tapes and make your own character?
When I first heard the script, I had never seen like a picture of Mark or read anything about him, and I had to make an audition tape for the movie the next day, so I decided that I would just not look at him at all, because I figured if I were to play the role, I would want to, you know, do it the right way and look at everything I could find, see how that would be helpful. So I just made it, you know, an audition tape with my idea of what this person is like based on Aaron's wonderful characterization and very kind of thorough script. So I felt like I was comfortable in the character at that point, but then, you know, more than anything, to feel as prepared as possible, I did as much as I could in the limited time we had prior to shooting the movie to find out about the real person. And then on set, I just didn't, I mean, I, you know, I would listen to interviews with Mark on the way to work and stuff and have pictures of him in my trailer and stuff, but I found that was just not helpful in being kind of like, it just didn't feel as helpful as like just kind of mining what interests me more about this person who has kind of like, you know, a difficult emotional inner life, a difficulty gauging other people's emotional reactions to him, and that stuff is so much more interesting to me than, you know, kind of getting a cadence of a voice right, or, you know, kind of the more, you know, more specific
actors. I mean, one of the things that we, you know, made sure on every, for everybody was, don't do an impersonation, don't, you know, just, like, wear it, like, you know, be that person, respond to it as you would you know, like with Sean Parker, like, I mean, Justin's really nothing like Sean, but we needed it to be Justin because we needed to have the character of Mark Zuckerberg look across a restaurant and go, wow, that guy has all the answers. That, you know, when he walks in, you go, I'd like it to be that easy.
Yeah, I asked you in one of the rehearsals if I should dye my hair red, which I was wanting to do, and you said, you didn't ever answer. You just said, think about what it must be like to be 19 and start this
thing.
Or to
be redhead. Why would you want to do that?
No.
Right, that's the...
friend Jason Fung's redhead, too.
That was... And that's probably what makes it a more interesting true story than the story of accuracy.
Well, it's also, you're trying to, you know, would it be true to a time and true to a place and true to youth and callow youth and good decisions and bad decisions and groundbreaking innovation and pettiness and that's what it needed to be. It didn't need to be, it's not a legal document, it's a movie.
Yes, in the great shift.
At any point pre or post the movie, did you get the blessing of any of the key players, Mark?
At any point in the movie, did any of the key players, Mark or anybody, give you the blessing?
No, and you know, quite honestly, I've said this before, and I mean this in the nicest possible way. I mean, I really felt, we said this time and again, if we do our jobs right, we're going to be disowned by everybody involved. And I think that's kind of the truth. Is like, you know, I think Divya was the only one who actually was like, yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Which one?
Divya. But no, I think in these cases, you can stay true to the facts, but you can't stay true to the point of view because everybody has their own, and it's totally subjective. And again, it's not, you know, I think if we set out to say Mark Zuckerberg was the lone gunman in Dealey Plaza, you know, we would have felt differently about the kind of research that we did. But, you know, I think in the end, when you look at, you know, the guys who got screwed the most in this story only got $65 million. So
screw me like that any day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are we talking about? I don't know anything about the deal structure of Facebook or how. Is what?
You should know that, David.
I know. Yeah, I should. I don't know why I should, but I should. I don't really care.
It's okay.
Yeah. Ghostbusters. I'd like to know about the memorization. So naturally to him, all these lines that he would...
The memorization of the amount of dialogue? And
correct.
How did you do that, Jesse?
Cue cards.
Yeah.
Huge.
I play tapes while I sleep. The memorizing is only difficult for me when it's, you know, unnatural to the character, when the dialogue seems inconsistent with itself or with the character, and this was not the case, and the dialogue was so wonderful, and it coincided with the emotional shifts of the characters in all the right ways and all the right times. So it was, you know, it was fun to learn, I guess. The only difficult part to learn was some of the technical jargon, because I don't know those words.
Did you learn to write code?
I tried. You know, I bought a book called C++ for Dummies. And I read the opening paragraph, and then I went back to the store and started C++. Yeah, exactly.
Embraced my dummy head.
Yeah.
You know, one of the interesting things was we kind of, from the beginning, we knew that there was no way that we were going to be able to synchronize. There was no way we were going to be able to ask actors to not only learn, you know, 9 pages to be delivered in 3.5 minutes, but also to type and code at the same time. So a lot of it is, not a lot of it, all of it, like thousands of shots of people typing are done in front of a blue monitor. So, and one of the weird things about watching this movie in its rough cut form was nothing on the screen is actually happening. They're just like I've been away and nothing's happening. And so there was no like sense of being connected to the outside world. And it was truly painful to watch. This is never going to work. Like, it just looks stupid. Like, here are these people. And I remember, like, and shots would come in. And we had this amazing, you know, research and kind of technical support department who all they would go through and they would literally look and they would say, okay, well, it's this keystroke and this keystroke. And they would go through and edit all the material so that the stuff that was on the screen would be, I mean, we went in and retouched stuff. So it was like version, you know, 1.3 as opposed to version 1.9 because that was the one that would have come out in August of that year. So we would do all the stuff. And when it finally, like, when shots, and there are hundreds of shots of people in front of the screen, and the actors are just, you know. And finally, when those images got put in the screen, you was like, oh, thank God. Because it really, until then, it looked really stupid. It was,
you're breaking the illusion.
No, it's like, you know, it's like, I can imagine it was like watching the rough cut of Star Wars, and people go, shh, we're going to hyperspace. Trust me, it's going to be great. It's fine. Stars on Street 5, it's going to be amazing.
Back in the back.
How did shooting with the red camera affect your production schedule? Did you shoot with more than one camera? Did you do long takes?
I've shot digitally on three movies. We kind of graduated to the red camera because it's kind of gradually, you know, with the MX sensor, it kind of became like a real production tool. We shot, I'm assuming it's right, 262 hours of selects. So we rolled two cameras about, on a 10 or 12 hour shoot day, we probably had somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 hours a day. So 16 hours a day. So we rolled more, you know, we rolled constantly. We were rolling all the time. And sometimes...
Do you record to red drive or compact flash?
Both, depending on what... You know, depositions, we were in drives, and we were solid-state drives, and most of the stuff at Harvard was, you know, compact flash, because it's just faster, you know. But the whole question of digital, in the case of this movie, because it's so dialogue intensive, was it allowed us to not be thinking in terms of, you know, a dollar a foot. You know, it allowed us to be able to just go out and come in again. And part of, you know, and I stole this liberally from Frank Capra, who used to have, like, when he was making films at Columbia, because they were a really cheap studio way back when, not today. But they used to make him, he could only print three takes or something, so he'd keep the camera rolling and have the whole, you know, have a cast exit and come back in and start the scene over again. And it would make people, makes people more urgent. It's funny what it does, because you can, you know, you want to shave, you know, 40 seconds off of something, you go, all right, great, everybody, stop what you're doing, put your coffee cups down, walk out, come back in again, and everybody gets this kind of like, they all get a little on pins and needles, and so things end up going faster. And that was a great thing about the Red, was like he didn't care. And we went through 260 hours of selects, and we whittled it down, and we cut the movie in 12 weeks.
Did you cut it Final Cut?
Yes.
You're going to ask a question.
I was just wondering if either of you guys have read the New Time magazine, which Zuckerberg is Man of the Year, and whether you had any reaction.
Person.
Huh?
Person.
You're asking if they read Time magazine.
I haven't.
I've heard of the Time Person of the Year.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
No.
Just significant, because they spend one little tiny graph on the movie, which they get into around the 15th graph, and then they just drop it. It's like...
They spent one paragraph.
Are you kidding?
Just one tiny paragraph on a movie. What do you think of that?
It's shameful.
You spent
the whole movie on
that. Yeah, exactly. I gave you so much screen time. I can't believe you did.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, what's up? Wondering what your favorite scene to film was.
What was the favorite scene to film for both of you?
Well, the first scene that is in the movie was really exciting because we had you know, kind of allotted two nights for it, and it was like really the first significant scene we shot. We did it on the third day of the movie, and it was so exciting because it's an exciting scene anyway. There are many, you know, I know there were a lot of actors in here, so you could tell from the first scene there were a lot of kind of like subtle but very complicated emotional shifts within the scene. There are many different ways to play the scene. You know, you can play it confrontational. You could also play it completely passive, as though everything the girl character is saying has no effect on me emotionally. And then we did the scene many times and tried different versions of it. Tried all of these things, and after each take, David had another kind of great idea about how to attack it. It was really exciting.
I don't have favorite scenes to shoot. I kind of tend to go. I mean, there's times when you go, yeah, that was pretty good. That went well. I mean, I enjoyed shooting that first scene just because it was nice, because we talked about it for so long, and it was really kind of, you know, the set the tone. So it was fun. You know, we shot over two nights. We shot, and we were able to do it. We started, you know, the kind of master the 50-50, the two of them at the table, and then we went into Over the Shoulder. And predominantly, I think we probably shot 45 takes of the Over the Shoulder simultaneously, over his shoulder and over her shoulder, at the same time, so they could overlap. So one of the things was, you know, like the first time I think the first three or four takes that we did, we had the background, which is in, guys are all talking, drop plates, spill gear, laugh, turn on the jukebox. Just because we had to get everybody to understand the kind of volume, you know, it's 50 cent beer night, like in Cambridge, like you can't, you know, the place is packed, but you can't hear yourself think. So it was that thing, is to get that kind of energy. And then you could strip it all away and go, okay, now we're going to be home. And then by that time, everybody by take four, everyone's like, well, I thought we were going to get, and then they had all the Panama, it was weird and lame. But you had this feeling of what, how fast they needed to talk and how loud they needed to talk. And
did you do that in the club scene also with the
the club scene,
so they could talk at that level.
And it's still weird because there's still like probably, you know, later on in the day, you guys' voices would drop a little bit because they were trying to, you know, suss each other out. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, the whole idea was, is see Mark Zuckerberg in a place where it's probably been two or three times in his life, because he's been so fucking busy up until then. And it's 130 dB, and he's just, you know, a fish out of water.
Okay, we have time for a couple more questions.
That's
and
it. It's
and
two.
Somebody needs to make him cry, because he promised, so yeah. They better be good ones. You look like you'd ask a question that make him cry.
Well, I just
want
to say, great movie. I was wondering
Thank
about...
You.
That's one of the best movies I've seen this year. But it made me think about exclusivity and how you create that sense of waiting in line behind the velvet rope on the internet, and how it was so genius. I was in school, I went to Northwestern when it opened, and how we felt left out because we heard something was buzzing on the East Coast, and then we heard it jump to Stanford, and a lot of people at Northwestern thought, wait, but we got left behind.
What are we, chump liver?
That buzz and energy similar to movie premieres. And how do you think the internet has sort of changed that? With WikiLeaks, but also with something like Facebook, in your personal lives as well as in your craft and what you do in the art field.
Jesse.
I've only been in movies during the age of people writing everything they think about movies on the internet, and it's like kind of mortifying. I wish I was older. That's been my impression. I don't, you know, I isolate myself so much from anything that, any popular culture. I mean, I don't see movies. I don't have a TV. I don't even have a DVD player. I'm so like, I feel so like...
Can we get somebody at Sony on that?
Yeah. I feel like, in a way, like the characters are isolated because they feel alienated from kind of like traditional socialization. make like an effort to isolate myself because I feel so inundated just by virtue of like being in them and stuff occasionally. And it's very strange. I mean, I was on the subway today and there was like a guy holding his iPod near my face and I knew he was taking a picture. I mean, it's just mortifying. That's my reaction to it. I would like to WikiLeak that picture.
And a final question.
Okay, I guess I won't make you cry. I was just thinking maybe if I ask you to cry, I'd ask you to cry.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I won't forget that. That won't make you cry.
It's not for the calluses.
You're known for a lot of takes, and there was that interview recently with Robert Duvall saying that Stanley Kubrick was like the enemy of actors for the amount of takes he does. I want to know what your take on that was.
I think you have. Look,
let me repeat the question.
Yeah.
He's saying that David's known for a lot of takes, and Stanley Kubrick did a lot of takes, and Robert Duvall said that Stanley Kubrick was the enemy of actors. So he's basically saying you're the enemy of actors,
yeah.
And David.
Yeah. there are certain people who are not going to play with you. And I've worked with them, and there are certain people who don't get better after six or seven takes. And, you know, you've got to, you know, putting together a basketball team, you know, you got to have a point guard, you got to have a center, and you got to have a power forward. You're putting an entire, I mean, you know, cameraman can be a crybaby. You know, the production designer can be, you know, an artiste. And you're negotiating all of these different personalities. You know, Bob Duvall is a national treasure, and he should work the way that he wants to work. And it's certainly, and I respect that, and I think that there are certain things that are may or may not be wooden about different kinds of performance styles. And it's certainly for somebody who lives, you know, if you live in the moment, you respect that, and you have to, you know, make that, that's your truth, that's your thing, that's, you know, I had this conversation with Justin Timberlake, and I said, look, if you're a guy who needs to be, in order to be alive, you gotta have, you know, 30 cc's of nitroglycerin pumping through your veins and be in the 50-yard line of the Super Bowl with 85,000, you know, if Saturday Night Live is what you gotta have from this situation, it isn't gonna be that. Like, we're going to microfractally explore this text, because all there is in this movie is people talking. And we are going to pick that shit out of pepper. We are going to find the moments between the moments that are written to move and resonate and find a different thing. And if you're not willing, you know, if you're not willing to hit that hole a lot of times, you know, don't do this, because I'm telling you right now, it's going to be agony for you. If you have to, if that's the charge of it for you, is a, you know, wardrobe malfunction, you're going to get that. There's not going to be a lot of surprises here. It's going to be about, you got to surprise yourself in, these are your 9 pages that you got to deliver, and I'm going to have you do it until you have gone past memorizing it, until you've gone past knowing your own name, until we can get all of the physical nonsense so ingrained that we can get to what the actual text is, which is, you know, this, you know, philosophically, you either believe that characters are representing themselves as they truly are, or I believe philosophically that language was invented for people to be able to lie to one another. So, to me, the interesting thing is what somebody's eyes are doing as they're swearing their allegiance to Mark Zuckerberg and his creation. That, to me, is what's interesting. So let's get past the point where you know what you're supposed to be doing and get to the thing where we can start to, where you know that shit inside out, and I can wake you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and you can go. Victoria's Secret.
And Jesse, working in this process of, you know, David's process where he does a lot of takes, was that similar to anything you've done before? How did you find that process and what did you get out of it?
No, I never. I've done that before. I mean, I've done mostly independent movies where you can only really do 2, just for the practical reasons. And it was fantastic. I mean, if there is an enemy of actors, it's the person on the set who like rolls their eyes when you ask to do it again because you have an idea or because you want to try something to get it right because you didn't feel like you got it 100% the last time. And I've seen that too, and that's really the enemy because it just indicates you that everything you're doing that you place a lot of importance on is really kind of just silly and indulgent. And it's possible to view it that way too, but that's dangerous. And so this was fantastic. As I said, the first scene we did it over the course of 2 nights, so it gave me the opportunity to try the character in so many different ways. You never get an opportunity like that. It was phenomenal, not only to get kind of one thing, not only to try to get one thing right, but to try to get several different things right. It was exhilarating. I mean, I wish, that every experience was like that, but just people are not working that way. And he also said a great thing the first week. The second week I said to him, the first week was it was such an exhilarating week. He said, I'll just wait till, week 10 or whatever. But then he said, I just can't believe how people, fly from all over the world to come to this one set. They build this incredible set with, scuff marks and the staircases and everything. And then we only do it twice and all go back to our respective places. So it seemed like, why not do it as many times as we have the opportunity to?
And what do you both miss about Mark Zuckerberg?
Now
that you finished the movie,
and
that confidence.
I don't miss him at all. Yeah, can't turn a quarter without seeing his face.
All right, thanks you guys. Thank you.